Thanks very much. So I have the unenviable task of trying to bring things together. Well, congratulations to the organisers first. I think it's been an absolutely fascinating day. And I have to start with two apologies. One is to David Zakarian, who is he still here? No, he is. Okay, so, well, I'll still apologise to him because I didn't see his paper because I had to give a lecture in the middle of the day, so I nipped out. So I apologise to David. And second, my second apology is really to everyone, because I am not a paleographer. I'm a historian. So I'm one of those people who depends on all the much more skillful work that everyone in this room does. So if the questions I ask in this summing up seem ignorant or obvious to everyone else, I apologise for this in advance. Now, the organisers have given me an hour. I think probably I will take the full hour, maybe not. No, I'm not joking. I will take about 10 minutes, I think about 10 minutes or so, and then we can get to the discussion. So I'll offer some thoughts about things, trying to give tidings together, and then I'll open the floor to discussion, and maybe I can field questions from people thoughts that have arisen from the day. What I'm not going to do is summarise anyone's papers. I think we've all been here and seen the papers. There's no point in me doing this. But simply reflect on some shared issues which struck me between the papers. So the purpose of gathering people together from various different geographical and linguistic specialisms was to show how such specialisms taught their various codicological and paleographic cultures. And I think this has been a great success. We've been treated to a sort of a panorama of the whole Eurasian world, including Africa as well, and I've enjoyed it immensely. Not only have we learned a range of different pedagogical techniques, but also been introduced to manuscript production, use, reuse, transmission, and manuscript transformation in the digital age. Now, in terms of manuscripts and manuscript cultures, the juxtaposition of all these different papers, of course, invites comparison across the disciplinary divides. Although we have had, some very interesting hints throughout the day about that the manuscript cultures which we're discussing are not discrete. They are not, I'm being heckled by a 5-6-month-old, yeah. That the manuscript cultures we've been comparing aren't necessarily discrete. That is, there may be connections between them, not only between Ireland and Britain, but also on a grander scale between Japan and China and the Islamicate world. I suppose that's a topic for another day. We've seen, I think, a distinct imbalance between different disciplines, different national traditions, around the availability of resources, both for teaching and research. Whether it be the availability of handbooks, scripts, the absence of which Dorrit pointed to for Arabic, or the diverse digital tools available for some disciplines, like, for example, for Hebrew, as we saw in the opening and concluding sessions for Ireland, for Irish text too. We've had quite a lot of talk of the desire for digitization, for the integration of resources, and I wonder what different participants in the conference think about the limits or limitations of this desire. Are the digital tools available for one language appropriate for another? And I ask this question in ignorance. How important or determinative are the different scripts? So it's clear from the first paper that was presented to us so stylishly by Lawrence that the kind of Hebrew manuscripts shown there lend themselves quite well to transcription tools. But such tools will clearly not work for other cursive scripts or scripts which can be defective, or that at least they'll only work in a limited way, as I understand it, like Arabic, again, as Dorrit showed to us. as we saw, the various possibilities with the RASM, the sort of bare script, which can then be interpreted in various ways, which a computer could not do at present, I think. What kind of unique tools do Arabists or sinologists need? Is the striking method of scribal imitation, which we heard about by Christopher for China and Andrea for Ireland, that is where you train in calligraphy, you repeat the processes of the scribe in order to understand how a manuscript is actually produced, is that appropriate or useful for all languages? And how do different patterns of preservation and survival, such as the overwhelming number of untouched manuscripts in Arabic, shape a different research agendas and approaches? I offer these questions to the room at large. At the same time, I also think we should consider carefully the different institutional, legal, and national frameworks within which manuscripts are stored. So in Britain, we're quite accustomed now, and very recently, to thinking about open access as something possible and desirable. Although, as pointed out by Yasmin, this is not, in fact, free, but requires funding, both to fund the people who do the work, and then, importantly, to sustain the work afterwards. So I think we all know about large projects that tried to make lots of information or text available, and then they simply died because after the project ended, there was no funding, so they couldn't store the data or host websites, etc. Can we expect other places to adopt the same standards as our own and to use the same systems? Are we going to have open access to, for example, to the Chinese bamboo text, which Christopher presented to us, and should we expect it? Should they adopt our system of metadata? Again, that's a question from ignorance, but I wonder about the ethical implications of this and the possibilities. And is there a danger that our databases will ultimately be unrepresentative or even deeply ideological? Because certain key things are, for example, in REN, and therefore absent from the database artificially, or because Chinese scholars, for example, digitize and publish all the Chinese manuscripts from Dunhuang, as we heard in print form earlier from Imre, while ignoring all those in Uyghur, a particularly acute example of a possible dissonance in the way that materials are published. There was some mention that databases were unbiased, but I'm not really sure if this is correct. And I wonder if there is a danger that we replace one kind of authoritarianism with another in using databases. Anyway, I offer that thought for people to reflect on. So the other grand theme that I think has probably been very obvious to everyone today, which I'll finish on, is an ongoing tension between more traditional and more technological approaches to paleography, both in teaching and in research. We have been shown the various benefits of technology and some of the exciting work being done by people like Robin to make Armenian accessible, even where there aren't Armenian collections or people able to teach Armenian. Although we've also been reminded by Anne-Marie towards the end of the day that technologies have an annoying tendency to change very rapidly, unlike the Codex. Various others, however, including Judith, Imre, and Yasmin, and I hope I'm not misrepresenting people, have insisted on the importance of handling the manuscripts themselves, of seeing them as three-dimensional artifacts within a broader codicological approach. Now, no doubt these two approaches are not incompatible, and various people have said so, and I suppose it depends on what kind of thing you want to do with them. You know, there's been a sort of fuzzy distinction, I think, between teaching and research, but one thing might be appropriate for teaching, another for research. But one of the interesting contrasts in several papers, I thought, was between treating the manuscript as a sort of static entity in which elements can be isolated and compared, and treating the manuscript as a kind of process where things like ductus and cognition, things which might be beyond digital comprehension, are crucial. Now, I wrote these comments in the break. That's where I ran out of time. So I will end there, and I will open the floor to wider discussion.